Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In any movie, there is a character that appears in every scene. It speaks throughout the film. It is the most important voice, whose words are notes and lines are music. This is the soundtrack to The Imitation Game, written by the French composer Alexandre Desplat. The music is one of five nominees for this year's Academy Award for Best Soundtrack. And George S. Clinton, chair of the film scoring department at Berklee College of Music, says, "If you listen closely, you can hear why the soundtrack is among this year's standouts."
You know what an arpeggio is? It's a, you know, notes that are done in a sequence that are intervals apart and they repeat.
The Imitation Game is about Alan Turing, the brilliant, difficult British mathematician and the code-breaking machine he created during World War II. Clinton says we hear Turing's genius in the arpeggio's mathematical precision.
That was one of the ways that he tried to indicate what was going on inside the mind of the man and also the machine. So it has almost a minimalist quality to it sometimes.
George S. Clinton walked us through this year's five Oscar nominees. He's uniquely qualified to do so. Not only does he chair Berklee's film scoring department, as we said, but he also sits on the Academy Committee that selected the nominated scores. So we listened to each nominee, beginning with The Imitation Game, and then we moved on to another score written by Alexandre Desplat, one with a completely different sound. The music for Wes Anderson's film, The Grand Budapest Hotel.
And the interesting thing about this is it's not just Desplat's music that we're hearing. It's also music by people who are renowned for Russian folk songs and pieces composed by Eastern European composers that are in the more traditional vein.
Almost like another character,
Another
voice
exactly.
In the movie. And I wanted to use an example from the Grand Budapest Hotel itself, because we've got a bit of dialogue from the film, and we also hear Desplat's music and how that sort of plays into propelling the scene along. So let's listen.
"How's our darling Agatha?
'Twas first light when I saw her face upon the heath, and hence did I return day by day entranced. Though vinegar did brine my heart, never will."
"Very good. I'm going to stop you there because the alarm has sounded, but remember where we left off because I insist you finish later."
It's great storytelling. It doesn't matter how good you are technically or musically as a composer, if you don't have that unique ability to respond to a piece of film and express that through your music in a creative way like we just heard, you're not going to be very good at it.
I mean, you've written many a film score. How is it that you work, you know, around or with the dialogue, with the visuals that are going on to make your music, you know, at one with all of that?
The thing that has to drive your choices, whether it's instrumentation, whether it's the mood that it's in, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, has to be what's happening on the screen at that moment. I go through this painful process after I've created a score of asking myself the question, is the music that I've written here for this scene actually serving the scene, or am I just getting off musically?
So let's talk a little bit about another one of the nominees, and that's Hans Zimmer, who wrote the score for Interstellar. Mm. Zimmer was brought into Interstellar at the very beginning, when the movie was first conceived or the screenplay was written.
Yeah, it's very interesting the way Chris Nolan approached him on this. He sent him over a one-page summary of the fable involved in the film. Didn't tell him it was a space movie, didn't tell him anything about it. Just this fable of the father and the daughter and, you know, all of that. And he said, I'm just sending you this and I want you to spend a day coming up with music that addresses this fable. And at the end of the day, the next day, Nolan came over and heard it, and that turned out to be the main theme for this movie. But it wasn't until they met that Hans knew that this was a sci-fi film. He had no idea what it was.
Do you think that the early collaboration that you were talking about between Zimmer and Nolan, that having a theme so early in the film actually may have helped shape the rest of the movie in any way?
Oh yeah, it does, without a doubt. All creative relationships inform each other and therefore inform the creation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the movie that it became because Hans was the composer would not have been the movie it was had it been one of these other composers.
Wow.
You can really hear the pipe organ in there, and that was a huge choice for this film. And it came about because of Chris Nolan wanting Hans to address the religious aspect of the Temple of Space. Mm-hmm. And the organ was this mysterious connection between the physical and the metaphysical back in the day when the pipe organ was the instrument. And they spent several days in this church in England recording this amazing pipe organ player.
Oh, wow.
Live. It's not samples. It's like God's pipe organ. I saw it at the IMAX over here at Lowe's.
Uh-huh.
It was unbelievable. I just sat there trembling with joy because the organ kept getting louder and louder. It was just an amazing experience.
That leads me to ask you, what do you think? This is a huge, broad question, but we're talking about the cathedral space, so why not? I mean, what do you think the purpose of a film score is in terms of the moviegoer's actual experience of the final product?
Mm-hmm. One of the things music permits us to do and encourages us to do is to unlock our emotions. It's a very subtle thing. And I think that one of the really good film composers, like these guys, use that element in the storytelling. They're able to lean on that in ways where you don't feel manipulated. You just feel encouraged.
Right. Well, you say you don't feel manipulated, but on the other hand, I mean, the music, to my mind, is so important that it can completely set or change the mood.
Oh, yeah.
With exactly the same visuals.
Well, say right now, this conversation we're having. You know, we could be having this conversation and suddenly we hear the music, bottom, bottom, bottom,
and I am getting out of the water.
Exactly. You know, we would expect a big shark to come through. Or if it was some silly piece of music from Austin Powers, we would think that we were in the 60s.
Yeah, it's a pretty weighty responsibility for the composer, then.
It is.
Let's talk a little bit more about another one of this year's nominees for Best Original Film Score. This is from The Theory of Everything. It's by Johan Johansson, and let's hear a little bit from that. So, George, Johansson's score actually took home the Golden Globe this year.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
It's really amazing. He is a composer that doesn't compose only film scores. He also composes his own music. And in that piece, you heard that da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, going on and propelling the whole thing forward while everything was growing and collapsing around it. And that's a remarkable effect. You know, he's really a master of that. And what a great approach towards this particular movie.
This movie, The Theory of Everything, is about the life of famed physicist Stephen Hawking.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, you said that things expand and contract musically. Well,
yeah.
He's a physicist, of course, talking about the expansion and contraction of the universe.
There you go. it's almost like you're inside Hawkins' mind, and,
yeah.
and you feel these ideas propelling him forward through this illness, even to this day.
Well, let's actually talk about a film and a film score of an entirely different type of person. And it's from a film called Mr. Turner, about the British painter J.M.W. Turner, of course famous for his fabulous seascapes. And the score to Mr. Turner was written by Gary Urshan. So let's listen.
Very interesting score. I think this is possibly one of my favorite scores for that's been around for a while. But the cool thing about it is that sound that starts that music we just heard is a sopranino saxophone. You've seen soprano saxophones that look like clarinets,
yeah.
except they're gold. Well, sopranino is half the size of a soprano. And so that beautiful high pitch, he uses that almost like a painter would use a shade of yellow. In fact, his whole score is almost the way that Turner painted.
So listeners, I just want to remind you that I am sitting across the table from a person who might be, you know, uniquely qualified to talk to us about film scores today, because not only are you the chair of the film scoring department at mm-hmm. the Berklee College of Music, but as we mentioned at the beginning here, you are also a member of the Academy's music branch. So you had a hand in sort of selecting
yes.
these five nominees.
Right.
Okay, so forgive me, but can we take you to task a little bit about what's missing here?
You may.
So what film do you think is missing here? What score do you think is missing that should have been nominated?
Well, I'm not a member of the executive branch that made the decision to disqualify the score to Birdman, which I thought was brilliant.
Birdman, that's the film starring Michael Keaton and directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Amazingly brilliant score.
Composed by Antonio Sanchez.
Yeah, really. And the director himself, I mean, just the way he edited that film together so it looks like all one huge long shot.
Right.
Having the foresight and the creative vision of bringing in just a solo drummer to propel all of this. I heard the director say because of his shots were not edited in a particular rhythmic way, he felt like that he needed the drums to be the rhythm for the film. The reason the executive branch and the music branch decided to disqualify it is because they felt like the classical music that he also used in juxtaposition to this drumming was so significant that the drumming would not have been as effective as a score without the addition of these classical pieces. I think that is a mistake. If anybody's listening, you know, any of my friends who are on the executive branch, that was a boneheaded decision.
Okay, so Birdman as a film and its score missing from the list of five. I also noticed that another thing that's missing, American composers.
I know, and also what's missing is women.
Yeah. It's again.
I know. It's just 35% of our majors in film scoring are women, which is great. And if that were the case in the industry, we'd see a woman on here somewhere. But it isn't.
Well, here we have arrived at the moment where I can't resist. I've got to ask you.
Okay.
Who's your pick?
My winner or my favorite?
Oh. Oh, interesting. So I gather that you have two different answers to that question.
Well, I think I do. I think I don't know. I think Interstellar might win simply because it's such a huge film and such a big idea. Since Birdman was not included, my favorite score was Mr. Turner. I think it's one of the most original uses of those instruments that I've heard in a long time and really told that story.
Mm-hmm. And what about your favorite film score of all time?
Okay, that's such a hard question. It's like all times. Well, since you put it in that light, I'd say Cinema Paradiso. You know, you hear the first few notes of that and you're immediately, you have the same feeling you had when you saw the movie. So to me, that makes it an amazing score.
Well, I could not think of a better way to end than by talking about a movie that pays homage to people's love of movies.
There you go.
Well, George S. Clinton is the chair of the film scoring department at the Berklee College of Music. Really wonderful speaking with you. Thank you so
much.
Same
here, Magna. Thank you.
And listeners, you can hear more of the music we discussed here today. Go to our website, radioboston.org.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Lisa Mullins.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Stay in and watch a movie and then join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.